Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place for the show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? So yeah, it's Kent and I here remotely again as we prepare for New Year's Eve tomorrow. But how you been doing? Everything going well?
Yeah, things are good. Yeah, we had a fun holiday, last couple weeks, and it was a good Christmas, and all good things.
Got any fun plans for New Year's Eve?
I think it's going to be a pretty low-key New Year's Eve with our crew, probably an early night. Nothing too exciting. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same. My mom's over watching the baby, so we might have a little bit of fun. Jay, my wife and I go out in the town, but more than likely we'll just stay here and fall asleep because that's how every night goes pretty much.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Today we're going to talk the last two games over the Christmas week. It was Golden Knights Ducks. It feels like more than a week ago now, but it wasn't quite. And then Flyers Ducks just a couple days ago. Obviously, the Ducks pull a 4-3 victory out over the Golden Knights just a few days ago. And then the Ducks lose another tough one in overtime. John Gibson just had a great game, really kept the Ducks in it, but unfortunately, they can't pull it out in the OT. So it's basically a one-and-one week for the Ducks. But what were your thoughts about the Golden Knights game?
Definitely a good win for always a tough matchup for anyone, I think, in the league, but especially a team that's kind of given the Ducks some problems the last couple of years. So that was a great win, great showing. I thought they played well throughout the game, and it's been kind of I know we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but I think the sign and a kind of common problem or common theme throughout the league is consistency and night to night. And I think you look at in any team and the majority, regardless of where they're at the standings, the teams a little higher have it down a little better, but it's still tough to get a good result or get good performance, or you kind of never know what you're going to get on any given night. So I guess that was the whole purpose of the salary cap, to create balance and parity and keep everyone in it. So I think the Ducks are no different, obviously. But I thought they played well against the Golden Knights. Yeah, a couple of power play goals, always nice. Just kind of working around well in the 5-on-3, and always huge to get that goal with a second left, so you get the rest of that kind of bonus time on, you get to stay on the power play, and they capitalize on that too with a bit of a lucky break. But the benefits of shooting the puck, I know everyone's always a big advocate of shooting the puck up, especially on the power play. So that worked out well. And then we had the late scramble, but overall, what did you think of that one?
I think I agree with you there. I think first of all, good that they came back after going down a goal. It hasn't always been the case this season. Also, they got pretty heavily outshot, but they are still able to generate better scoring chances kind of on the whole than their opponents. It was definitely the case against the Golden Knights. A lot of chances close in to Malcolm Subban, who was playing goaltender in that game, and they converted them this time, which was definitely a good sign. Also, the power play continuing to be more successful than it was through the first quarter of the season is a great sign for the team. I know I thought it was a little bit of Derek Grant being on the power play, but he's injured now, so it's definitely I think an adjustment that they've made. Maybe it is shooting more that is really kind of boosted their power play over the last couple weeks. Everybody's really been saying how well Isaac Lundestrom's been playing. He had an assist in that game. It's hard though. He is a very good player, but it's hard. He's not that flashy. I mean, he does some flashy things, but he really does a lot of the small little things right when he is in the lineup up here in Anaheim. And I think that's kind of an understated. I mean, I think he has kind of an understated game. He just does the small things correctly, and whether or not it results in points, it's usually always beneficial to the Ducks. But I kind of noticed that I don't notice him in games, but not in a bad way. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's he does have one of those games. I think when we got to see him a lot, and he was noticeable in the preseason. Regular season, it's so hard to stand out. I mean, everybody's so good at that level, and especially if you do have kind of more of your game is kind of more based on kind of attention to detail and the subtleties, which, I mean, is absolutely tremendously important over there as it pertains to kind of team success. And I think those details usually come out more when you're kind of watching from the bench or kind of breaking down video kind of after the game and really kind of getting into the nuances and the details of the game and positioning and battles and decision-making and those kind of little things that are hard to pick up. I mean, even, someone like I've watched hockey my whole life, but it's different when you're at ice level, when you're kind of in the game on the ice, and that's where you can kind of, it's funny how the perspective kind of changes and you notice, especially when you're playing with a guy, when he does all the little things right and it makes everyone else's job on the ice that much easier. So I feel like he's one of those guys, but yeah, it's good to see him getting points and getting some kind of tangible reward. It's great as well. But yeah, no, I think he's a solid player. I think he's going to be a good one for the Ducks. He's only going to get better being so young.
That's a good point. His game seems like the type that isn't easiest to notice on TV because the camera is always kind of following the puck. So you don't see what he's doing behind the play or what he's doing off the puck, which is if he's usually in the right place at the right time, you know, doing those little things, it's because he's positioned himself correctly and he's reading the game well. So definitely, I think a player I'm going to watch when I next go to a Ducks game. Moving on to the Flyers, really good game by John Gibson. Absolutely stole a point in this one. The Ducks start off slowly. They do end up making a good push in the third period. They get the first goal, I believe, actually. It was a good Branson shot from the point. A little bit of a knuckle puck, I think. Yeah, but he ends up getting his third goal of the season. So he's really, sure. I mean, three goals overall isn't awesome for if you're expecting him to score, but we aren't expecting him to score. He's really a stay at home defenseman, and he's continuing to find a place here in Anaheim. And I think maybe the criticism of him early on was a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. I think, yeah, that's not what you're, and definitely not an expectation or his role or anything like that, but always a great bonus to get out of a defensive defenseman. And, yeah, I think he's played well. And, I mean, it's not like, I think he's definitely got some talent in the offensive zone as well, and production's great. But yeah, just the physicality and presence on the ice, I think it's been a welcome addition for sure. I think you mentioned, John Gibson that game was phenomenal. They made some unbelievable saves, kept the Ducks in it, and there was some good pressure coming from the Flyers, who, I mean, talk about consistency, got spanked up in San Jose the night before, and it kind of got, I don't know how public it was or how much what was said, but apparently the rumblings were that the coach wasn't happy. Of course, you're never going to be if you get beat 5-1 or 6-1 or whatever it was. But, talk about consistency. I mean, they come back on the back end of back-to-back games with travel, and they, I thought they played well. And when they needed some saves. I mean, the Ducks had some great A's as well, but another great guy, great player. He's kind of a great career and a kind of a heart and soul guy. Brian Elliott, had the chance to play with him in St. Louis, and just a great teammate and a phenomenal goalie too. And I guess he's in a backup role now at this stage of his career, but still such a key component to have that luxury to have a backup like that. And I thought it was a great performance by him. And rewinding a little bit, I think the Ducks kind of took advantage of the fact no Marc-Andre Fleury against the Vegas Knights, and no knock or disrespect at all to Malcolm Subban, but I think like that fourth goal, the winner, is just kind of a hard working goal, but just a spin around shot from the corner, kind of along the ice, that just kind of catches him off guard and sneaks in. Just kind of highlights the fact when you have two guys just at the top of their game. It was a great goaltending duel there against the Flyers.
Yeah, I agree. I think Subban, you mentioned Subban and the Golden Knights. He definitely has found his place in Las Vegas. He's played well since they started the last three seasons as a backup. When he was playing for the Bruins sporadically, the team who drafted him, he was like historically bad. So I'm happy to see that he's kind of bounced back and made a career for himself as the Golden Knights backup goaltender. But moving back to the Flyers game, I was wondering what you thought about the game-winning goal in overtime that the Flyers scored. It was just, to me, I'm watching it, I kind of had to watch it over again. Like, what happened there? Why was there all of a sudden like it felt like the Ducks' three players out there had gotten, I forget exactly who it was, had gotten back into position. They kind of booked it. And then I realized they went in for a change, which is why I forgot who scored. I think it was it Couturier who scored the game winner?
Hayes scored the winner, yeah.
Nice.
But I didn't see it. Yeah, I didn't see it seemed like I just saw the wide angle, and it was a nice pass by Voracek kind of up the gut with a little sauce right onto the tape. But yeah, I was wondering. We had a couple guys go for a change, and then just kind of the wrong time, and all of a sudden that's it.
Yeah, it was. I think Fowler came on the ice. It was kind of I want to say it was Kasha. I'd have to look at it again, but you see kind of Fowler get onto the ice, and he can't quite catch up with Hayes after that pass. And then I looked back, and all three players just got off the ice, and Philadelphia collected it pretty quickly. I think maybe they surprised the Ducks players, but I don't know. I guess if you're out there for a long time and you really have to change and that's your only opportunity, you got to take the risk rather than let the Flyers skate back up the ice with full possession and hem you into the zone. But it was definitely, I don't know, surprising once, because it was also weird the way that the camera covered it. Like you didn't really notice that there was a line change, and then all of a sudden you're like, if they were back there, why did they not stop Hayes from catching that pass? But it was because they were changing on the fly. So unfortunately they lose that game, but they do get a point, I think, thanks largely to John Gibson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of those saves were outstanding, and just again, like the subtleties that he does so well, like the rebound control and just the positioning, and like, yeah, when he's on, all that stuff is top notch, and he always just looks so composed and unflappable. And I thought that was that was kind of a textbook jungle. Just kind of looks unflappable, just makes it look easy, just always looks so composed, and like the rebound control and his body control, everything is just outstanding. He just makes it look easy, and he just made some really difficult saves look pretty routine. So a great performance by him.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to kind of the general couple points I wanted to discuss closing out this podcast. First of all, you mentioned it a little bit to start, the inconsistency. I think it has a lot to do with the youth on the Ducks roster and the fact that they can't really string together more than a couple wins in a row. And you need that long winning streak at some point in the season just to bank points. And that way, if you have a tough stretch, you can kind of stay. You've already kind of got your head high enough above water that you're still in the fight. Unfortunately, the Ducks just haven't been able to put together a long win streak like that. And do you think it has to do with youth? I mean, you mentioned the parity in the league and the salary cap and everything, but I mean, it feels like the thing that separates the top from the bottom of the league are those long winning streaks that some teams tend to go on now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you basically saw it last year. The one that sticks out is obviously St. Louis. They started in January and kind of rode that all the way till June. But yeah, I mean, you need that. You need long winning streaks. I remember in 2007, I was basically in the minors for the first half of the season that we won the cup. But I mean, the Ducks came out of the gates that year, something like 18-2-1 or something like that. Unbelievable. And yeah, you really do need that. You got to capitalize when things are going well. And I think you just, it's so hard. I mean, there's so much youth in the league as is. So you're going to get that inconsistency built in as guys still have a little ways to go. I mean, the talent and skill and athleticism and, you know, everything, all the parts are there, but just as far as the maturity and learning to be a pro and consistency and all that comes with time. So I think that's going to kind of be a new constant. Inconsistency is going to be the new constant in the NHL for a while. But yeah, I think the teams that are kind of towards the top basically have the talent and the experience and they know how to win enough to carry them through, whereas kind of all the teams in the middle or the bottom are still trying to figure that out. So everyone's going to be inconsistent to some degree. It's just the teams at the top have enough going for them that they can kind of survive and even having the ability to win games when you don't have your best game, just either through an individual performance or one aspect of your game is strong enough, like special teams or whatever it is, to carry you through. And you just have something that can kind of help you along those nights where you don't have your best and allow you to either pick up a point or somehow pick up two. So, and I think the Ducks are kind of just where they're at in the cycles of the kind of how franchises go these days. They just don't have enough. I don't know. I guess kind of enough. I think they have the talent, but just the maturing process of that talent isn't to a point where they can afford to not be at their best and be able to pick up wins. So I think it's like, you see the effort and the execution, they're still playing at a high level. I mean, even when they're losing, but yeah, I think it's going to be a grind for them this year. And in the big scheme of things, it's not always a bad thing. And sometimes it takes a couple of years and you know, you're just banking on getting these guys experience and kind of shoot for growth in the long term that way.
Before we continue, it's time to talk about MyBookie. Christmas has come and gone, but the Super Bowl is quickly approaching. We've seen just what our teams are capable of this season, and now it's time to get your last bets in before the bowl. Will the Ravens be able to get it done? Will Brady and the Patriots get themselves another ring? I bet you have a feeling. Head over to MyBookie.ag to make your predictions a reality. MyBookie is one of the most trusted in the industry. If you are looking for a sports book to make some bets for bowl games, MyBookie is where you want to go. Football not your thing? No worries, MyBookie's got it all, from the NBA to the Premier League. They've got the fastest payouts, the best promotions, and a very helpful 24/7 customer service team. You can even pull your bets together for a bigger payout. Let's say you got a couple of big favorites this week. Parlay wagers let you bet multiple games together, and if they all come through, you win big. MyBookie has more lines and better odds for the player than any other sportsbook around. If you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you'll get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. All you have to do is use our promo code BLV to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code BLV to get your extra cash from MyBookie. Bet, win, get paid.
Moving into basically where they are in the standings and what would be better for them. You mentioned growing kind of through adversity and your young players gaining experience and winning they're not at their best. Do you think it's a little better? Sorry, I'm getting a message that my internet is unstable. I'm having all sorts of issues today. Do you think it's more constructive for the Ducks to, and obviously Bob Murray and Dallas Eakins and the Ducks roster is not going to actively tank NHL players don't do that. Managers don't do that. They have jobs and paychecks to worry about and futures of their career. But do you think they're better off ending up lower in the standings, maybe challenging for a lottery spot and addressing some of their needs like a purebred goal scorer, we'll call it, or another top four defenseman that they maybe aren't going to be able to get through a trade? Or do you think it would be better for them to kind of continue they're always going to continue battling, but to end up in the last couple spots outside of the playoffs, maybe lower in the draft, but gain that adversity and experience?
Yeah, I think there's not really a clear-cut answer. I've never been a big fan of the tanking, and not that anyone is, but even that mentality that you want to lose to create or to hopefully get a higher pick. I feel like that's kind of a cultural flaw if that's kind of your mindset, where it's like you look at if you think of teams that have had like success over the long term, like the Red Wings back in the day, or the New England Patriots over the last few years. It's all about kind of, it's not always about drafting the highest players and getting the top level talent. It's about kind of the day in, day out kind of habits of your franchise and of your the whole culture of your system, basically. And I think that's kind of the most important thing. So I think, yeah, not necessarily, I guess in one respect, I don't think this year is really about wins and losses for the Ducks. I think it's about growth and the young players and being able to kind of get them experience in tough games, whether that's success or failure, equally important, and kind of let them kind of be around the Ryan Getzlaffs and the Cam Fowlers and kind of be side by side with them in the heat of battle and see, learn from guys like that what it really does take, and just kind of experience everything and just develop and build good habits that kind of from the day to day. So then no matter where you're drafting, you're going to get good players. And then to just be able to kind of get the absolute best out of those players and build a system that's able to get the best out of those players and allow people to kind of work together in a cohesive unit, I think. And kind of using your scouting and your scouting staff and player development, everyone kind of working together to get the best players available wherever you pick, and let your system kind of develop them and turn them into the best players that they can be for themselves and for your team. So I think I think they're doing a lot of things right as an overall franchise, and as the system, as far as what they're doing between San Diego and Anaheim. I think seeing a lot of good things, and the wins will come eventually. But the short answer was, I think they're like you said, they're all competitors. Everyone's playing to win every night, and there's no tanking. I don't think that's the answer, but obviously if they play hard and battle and end up the higher the draft pick, that's always a little bit of an advantage. But I think the bigger scheme of things is what you're doing every day as a franchise and as a team. I think they're getting a lot of that right these days, even if the wins aren't coming.
In your career, you in the NHL, you never really played on a team that was in that position, correct? I mean, the Ducks were always good. The Sharks, the Blues, the one season you were there had a good season, as well as Detroit and Philadelphia. So, I don't know. I can understand why you would disagree with that for sure.
Well, and then I guess there's the. I mean, you hate to. I don't know. Point fingers at people who've got it wrong, but I mean. High draft picks. I mean, you could have, say Edmonton had how many first overall picks, and doesn't necessarily mean anything. Even if you get like the top player each year of the draft, it's still a team sport. It's still a lot more goes into team success than talent. I mean, talent is important, yes, but it's one element of many. It's not the sole factor. So I think, you just look at guys like teams like Detroit and like Datsyuk and Zetterberg, like all those guys, they got in kind of mid to late rounds. And I think some of the Ducks kind of, I think they've done well with their first and second round picks, but to be able to see guys picking up in like the fifth round and sixth round that are, coming in and contributing, I think that's you got to get those picks right too, and those are definitely important. Another just all baked into the recipe of long-term success. And I think, like I say, they're doing a lot of things well.
Support for Believe comes from Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. It's 2020, and you know what that means. New year, new me, better personal hygiene. Men, listen up. Hair down there is so 2019. If you're going to pick any New Year's resolution this year, let it be to take care of your stuff. Manscaped is making it easy with their grooming products. You obviously don't want any sort of there's something about Mary situation going on that Ben Stiller's character encountered in the beginning of the movie. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your equipment bag. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. And don't use the same trimmer on your face that you're using on your undercarriage. That's just dirty. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing below-the-belt deodorant and undercarriage moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not put deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Speak for yourself. Get 20% off free shipping with the code BELIEVE at manscaped.com. That's BLEAV at manscaped.com. Start the new year off right by using the best tools for the job. Your undercarriage will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BELIEVE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV.
And touching on the final kind of part of this discussion is coming up on the trade deadline. The Ducks more than likely are going to be in the selling position when the trade deadline comes along. And obviously you don't want to discuss any of this lightly, because when you're discussing trade rumors or even people who potentially might be a target of a trade, they're human beings that have to uproot their whole lives and move with or without their family to another part of the country or another country even. But do you think that Ducks have any, and you obviously experienced that. Do you think the Ducks have anybody who, and understanding that maybe is a UFA or a restricted free agent, who other teams might want to go after? Because obviously the guys like Silverberg and Raquel and Henrik, they have a lot of, I mean, theoretically a lot of trade value, but it's going to be hard for a team either to offer the Ducks something that would make it worth their while to trade them, especially considering how long they're under contract, or vice versa. It would be hard for the Ducks maybe to get a team to give up that much for such a long commitment. Do you think there's anybody on the Ducks roster who with or without rumors, might be a target at the trade deadline? I was thinking before the injury, maybe Derek Grant, because he's had such a good season, although it would stink after the success he's found here that he'd be traded away again.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no one that really jumps out at me. I know it's always an interesting time, and I think that is a fair point. Like, having done it one time, and or obviously my career, yeah, I've actually got traded a couple of times, but I think that was before we had kids. So I mean, yeah, there's lives. Guys have lives, and kind of to uproot things, it can be difficult, but it's just kind of part of the business of pro sports. And as far as the Ducks, I can't really. I think Derek Grant is actually a good call, but with all the success that he had, I would think it would probably I would think both parties would probably be happy to kind of at least explore continuing having him here. But other than that, no, and I don't think, I mean, there's, I don't know. I don't see much of anything, the Ducks being very active at all at the trade deadline, but it's definitely always an exciting time as a fan, kind of, to see kind of who ends up where, who's buying, who's selling. But I don't really think the Ducks are really in much of a place to do anything as far as selling. I wouldn't say.
They don't have they don't have a Taylor Hall or a high price, highly sought after UFA that could be traded for a rental. But two guys that interest me, Andre Kasha, he was obviously included in the rumors when the Ducks were looking to trade for Justin Falk. So, right. I mean, and then Bob Murray seemed to get pretty upset when the Carolina Hurricanes owner allegedly leaked that Kasha's name. So, I mean, he's one I think you could get something for, and Bob Murray apparently hasn't been afraid of parting with him because he's included in discussions. The other one I'm really interested to see is Ryan Miller. I mean, he's been pretty vocal. He basically rejected a trade, I think, last year because he was rumored that he was maybe going to San Jose, and that fell through, and I think it came out that Miller said he wasn't interested in being traded because he's got a modified no trade clause. But I wonder, this year he's getting to the end of his career. He's only ever gotten to the conference final. He's never had a chance at a Stanley Cup. And I wonder if that maybe motivates him to accept a trade if it's obviously brought to him and the right team is involved, because he's talked about not wanting to leave Southern California. He's got a young kid and a wife who's an actress here. So he doesn't want to leave, but maybe if Bob Murray approaches him and says, "Hey, you know, the Blues are looking for somebody, goes down, let's say it's a Blues backup goaltender. The Blues are looking for somebody to back up Binnington, or the Hurricanes are looking for someone to back up. I don't even remember who's their starter right now, but, maybe a very competitive team with a chance to possibly challenge for a Stanley Cup title. Colorado would be another example. Do you think, I mean, there might be a possibility that Miller would be willing to go there as a backup and maybe chase that ring one more time?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you never know. I would think that side of it, I'm sure, would kind of at least be worth a discussion. But yeah, I definitely know he's very happy here and happy in Southern California. And I mean, if there was you think of guys you'd love to see kind of get a chance at a cup, and I think of everyone, I know they had to run there a couple of years ago, and Austin Steele jumbo up in San Jose, get another crack at one. And, you know, just, you'd love to see those kind of the high quality kind of character guys, class acts, and Ryan Miller's another guy like that. Like, you'd love to see him have a chance to chase it. I mean, he's had such a great career and always such a, I know just how he's been in Anaheim, and I'm such a great teammate and class act. I mean, guys love him and so well respected that you'd love to see good things for a guy like that. So, I mean, that would definitely be cool to see in that sense. But yeah, like I say, I know he's definitely happy here for sure.
Absolutely. Can't blame him if his family's based here. So, let's wrap it up with the three stars. Today, we're going to do the three hardest things that maybe people didn't assume, or just the three hardest things in your experience about playing in the NHL. And I will do the three hardest things for me about covering sports, because there's definitely some some challenges involved there as well.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I guess, yeah, like everybody's going to be different. I think just the trajectory of my career and in the pros and in college and you know, even back to a kid, I think it was just kind of the first hardest thing you kind of have to get over in your mind is just the intimidation factor of the NHL. And all of a sudden, kind of like, I got called up mid-season for my first NHL game, and I'd been in training camps and everything, but my first NHL game, all of a sudden, yeah, being on the bench with these guys and in a game that matters, and we're playing Phoenix, and Gretzky was coaching them at the time, and so yeah, you just gotta kind of get it off the pedestal in your mind that this is the NHL, and just kind of focus on competing and there just kind of lose yourself in the game and forget about everything else. So kind of losing the intimidation. And I don't think that's so much of an issue anymore with the kids kind of coming in hardwired at 18, 19 and not being phased at all. The back when I came in, that was still kind of a thing that like guys weren't good when they were young. It took you a few years to kind of get settled in and learn the ropes and pay your dues and all those things. And so not better or worse, just it was just a different time and a different era. So that was kind of a mental challenge for me, kind of getting over the fact that this was the NHL and kind of normalizing that. And then the second one, obviously the margin of error, so small, even against, like if you're matched up as a defenseman against third and fourth line players, I mean, they're all still NHL players and everyone has good systems and like, yeah, just the margin of error for being out of position by a couple feet, and just things you can cheat and get away with playing in the American League or that you could do in college. And yeah, just having the discipline to kind of always be in the right position, being on the right side of the guy. Yeah, just the attention to detail is just kind of paramount, or else I think when you see someone look bad on the ice and it looks like a bad mistake, it usually wasn't that bad. It just looks that bad because everyone's kind of, because the league is so good and you just don't see it. And especially now with how fast everyone is, just so yeah, even back then, the attention to detail and margin for error, that would be number two. And I think the third part was just kind of the mental maintenance day to day you kind of have to keep with yourself as far as like your confidence, because when things are going well, things tend to get magnified and it's easy to kind of get a little complacent and kind of believe the hype, and then the kind of that also can kind of lead to shortcuts here and there. And then when things aren't going well and there's now more than ever with social media and everything, the media and fans and things can kind of spiral pretty quick if you don't have that solid kind of base of self-confidence and confidence in your abilities and confidence in the work that you've put in, to kind of just have that foundation of confidence within yourself. So it's not too high, not too low. And it's always kind of a balancing act. And that was always something that I had to work on. I'm kind of an analytical type. So, and you'd kind of have time on the road when you're kind of in the hotel room or on flights, and there's kind of in between games and practices and just a lot of time to think, and you can wind up kind of being your own worst enemy. So that was always kind of a battle for a kind of analytical guy like myself. So those are my three kind of major challenges playing in the NHL. But I'm sure if you talk to any number of guys, everyone kind of has different things that they have to work on. But it's an unbelievable league. It was a dream come true playing in it. And it was a challenge every day. But obviously thankful for all my time I got to play. And I definitely feel very fortunate to have had that opportunity.
Yeah, some deep thoughts from Husky there. I totally get it. Yeah. I agree with you. No, I can certainly see how those are. You are an analytical guy, and I can see how those are very introspective answers. So, definitely very interesting for the journalism part of things. I mean, I've spent most of my short journalism career covering high school players. One of the harder things that can be involved with that is just getting them to say anything that doesn't sound like it just anything that just that of substance. Like, you go up to a high school football player after a game and you're like, "Hey, you know, you ran for 300 yards and four touchdowns today. You basically were your team. Can you just tell me about how that feels?" And then, "Good." You're like, "Okay, great. Have you had a game like this before? Are you ecstatic about how you've played?" "Yes." And you're just like, "Oh my God, not long-winded, I guess, or not as detailed when I was in high school. Holy cow." But then moving up to kind of the pro level, and having done some freelance work and been at some professional, some NHL games and some NBA, covering some NBA teams for different freelance assignments, it's very hard when you first show up to act like you've been there before. Like, you don't know. It's a very well-oiled machine. We'll call them the veteran journalists. The people who've been doing it forever know exactly where to be at what time, all the etiquette that's involved in addressing professional athletes, and where to stand, where not to stand. And it's just the first time when you're trying to walk the walk and make it look like you know what's going on, but you don't, is very intimidating. I mean, it was like that for me when I first went to a Ducks game. Luckily you were there, as were some of the other journalists. So I just kind of followed. So that helped. Yeah. But I just went to a Clippers practice. I was tasked with getting some quotes from some Clippers players before Christmas. And I had to go to two of them because the first one I went to, my deadline was like a few days away, but the first one I went to, I tried to pretend like I knew what was going on. And before I knew it, the media session was over. They had like two players speak for answer questions for 2.5 minutes. And it was like a rugby scrum trying to get your question in there. So all of a sudden they're like, hey, yeah, the media session is done now. Have a good day. And I'm standing there like, I didn't ask any questions or get to talk to anyone. So that can be tough. Luckily, I went back a couple days later with the plan and really jammed my way in there. So I got some good sound bites from Paul George, which was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. And then the last thing, I mean, the last one is a tough one. There's a lot of mental things. I think second guessing yourself in journalism is a big. I mean, you're writing. You're if someone has hired you to report on something, you're kind of becoming the de facto expert on a topic that you're writing about. And for me, it's hard not to write something or spend a lot of time working on something. And then when I'm done, be like, oh no, that was stupid. Start all over again. Like, it's just the longer I work on something, the worse I think it is, even though it might be really good. So, that's another hard part. And I think that a lot of people struggle with that, not just in journalism, but those are my three hard things about covering sports.
Nice. What can you talk about the difference? I guess is there a difference as far as doing media and interviews for the NBA versus like doing it for hockey? Is there any kind of differences to speak of, or is it all kind of like the same format, same kind of vibe? Because I know the NBA is basically been kind of looked on favorably for the way that they kind of for access to players and kind of promoting the players' personalities and that kind of thing. And I think the NHL is trying to kind of emulate a little bit of that. But have you noticed a difference between doing those two?
Definitely. I think just the culture of both sports is so different that NBA players are more willing to speak their minds, but also I think the teams guard against that more. Like, I think they're protected, they're shielded a lot more than in my experience NHL players are. That also might be the difference in market. I mean, not to disparage the Ducks or the NHL, but covering the Anaheim Ducks or even trying to go to or any sort of media availability for them is much more, a more relaxing atmosphere than it is covering the Los Angeles Clippers. You now have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and are going to probably play the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. So there's the last time I went, there were maybe 20 people in a scrum after practice trying to each get a question in. And I mean, you're kind of stepping on each other's toes and kind of shoving each other. Yeah. It really is almost a contact sport versus, I mean, the times I've interviewed Ducks players, they're sitting at their locker after a game. There's maybe three or four people around. Everybody gets a chance to ask a couple of questions. And it's, I mean, maybe in Toronto, that's different, but in Anaheim, it's certainly, I'm appreciative of it. It's a lot easier to talk to players, but there is that culture where it's still not, I mean, not to disparage the NBA, but it's in the NHL, it's not a lot of individual recognition or self-recognition. It's all about the team. It's all about kind of protecting your teammates. And so I'll say that it's more relaxing. I think it's easier for me to go cover an NHL, at least the NHL game team that I've covered so far. It's been easier, but the NBA, you can get some interesting stuff coming out of their mouths. Like, I remember the practice I was just at with the Clippers, Montrezl Harrell walked into the media scrum and was going like, I'm gonna Marshawn Lynch y'all. I'm not gonna tell you anything. And then he just started making jokes and like spouting off about this and that, nothing really particularly important involving the Clippers or basketball, but it was like he just kind of went on a little riff. So it's definitely a totally different atmosphere. But I to be honest, I prefer the hot. I mean, I'm biased because I love hockey, but I prefer covering hockey more than I like covering basketball.
Nice. Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for episode 16. Thanks. Thanks again for listening. And if you want to find me, my Twitter is DeliTweets, DelliTwets. Kent is on Instagram at Husk. That's HUSK _VERNA, correct?
That's it.
And you can also find him pretty regularly at his coffee shop, Huskins Coffee in Santa Ana. I bought myself a whole bunch of coffee from there right before the holidays. I meant to give it out as a Christmas gift, but I kept it. So it's so, yeah, but that's going to do it. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Everyone has a favorite photo. Now you can turn yours into canvas wall art at canvasworld.com. Canvasworld.com will print your photograph on a handcrafted custom canvas at the size of your choice. They combine the latest technology and environmentally friendly inks to produce canvas prints that are higher quality than ever available before. And they guarantee their work for life. Maybe that's why six of the country's top 10 hotel chains choose Canvasworld. Their prices are a fraction of what you'd pay elsewhere. And it's easy. Just upload your photo, choose a size, and you're done. They'll even digitally retouch your photo absolutely free. Place your order at canvasworld.com today and save 35%, plus get free shipping when you enter promo code PHOTO at checkout. Get big canvas prints at big savings at canvasworld.com and save 35% and get free shipping when you enter promo code PHOTO at checkout. Order yours today at canvasworld.com. That's canvasworld.com, where photos become art.